Josh, dog.
We're doing things.
We're doing things and stuff. It's been a long week.
It feels like it's been a long time since we did this, even though it's always been 2 weeks.
Exactly, but I mean, like, the last couple of weeks have been, like, extra shitty.
You're right. They've been both shitty and I've had a lot of things going on. You probably had a lot of things going on. So.
Same. And I think, like, just so the listeners at home know, I'm currently nursing a liter of beer right now because it's been such a shitty few weeks. And Devin's eating some brownies because...
I'm eating brownies that I made last night.
Tell me about these loaded brownies.
So they're dark chocolate, and then I was like, I need to find other things to put in this brownie. And so I've got, like, a quarter... bag of chocolate chips and a lot of peanuts. I crushed peanuts and put those in there.
I'm gonna try and really good. Channel my inner Bob Belcher. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I'm also drinking Javalia coffee, which is pretty good.
Oh hell yeah. Oh, you know what I need to do? Because I think the last time we recorded, I mentioned that I'd ordered the Vietnamese coffee filter.
Yeah.
And I thought I ordered Café Du Monde and condensed milk, and I actually hadn't. So I was very upset when I only got my Vietnamese coffee filter in the mail, and I was like, what the fuck? Where's my coffee? So I went to Kroger, like a cuck, to get my coffee where there were other human beings around, and... they didn't have Café Du Monde, and I'm like, Kroger, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah.
Like,
they had,
did you look at the...
International aisle?
The International aisle?
Yup, I did. That was the first place I looked. Nothing. And then I went to the coffee aisle, and they, of course, have 17 different kinds of Kroger coffee, but not a single can of Café Du Monde. And I was disappointed. I didn't even look for the condensed milk because I was too upset about the coffee not existing.
Well, now that I'm on third shift at my new job, right now is like 9 or 10 o'clock for me. So.
Oh shit, dog! Like 9 or 10 in the morning, or
You're 9 or 10 in the morning because I wake up at 2. So
shit, dog.
New development. So the weird part about this is that I got this job. So I was like, I'll try it. I'll at least try it out. And the work's really good. And I don't have to work overtime, but I'm still working third shift. So
yeah,
kind of weird, but yeah. So I work for VPEC as an analytical chemist.
Okay.
So super proud. So VPEC, they are and I was like, I don't know, man.
$20 an hour though.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That's about $3 more than I made at my last job.
Hell yeah, that's $5 more than $4.50 more than I make right now.
Okay, yeah. So the right pH, make sure it's the same, the right consistency with all of my science and all of my science equipment.
Very nice. Just for the listeners at home, you guys don't test on animals, right?
No, we don't.
Sweet.
I mean. We don't, because we don't. Okay.
You don't. That's all the listeners need to know.
we're a third-party distributor, so we don't have any of the... we don't actually do any of the actual R&D with that stuff. So yeah. I don't know anything about the
semi-finished product, the pH levels are good. They're not going to be too acidic or too basic.
Yeah, and we're not going to burn anybody's skin off.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You're not going to make the basic people wearing makeup extra basic. But that's only if you don't watch YouTube tutorials.
You know what, like, really puts me back about the job, though, is that the product on the floor, like, some of those bottles go for, like, $13.50, $17.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this stuff is getting marked up, like, 600%, 700%. It's mostly for the packaging.
Dude,
because the chemicals themselves... maybe cost like a couple cents.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, someone has to, I mean, as long as we're living in a capitalist society, someone has to make a profit. But
it's true.
So I, after this past week's Dubai Friday, I started listening to a podcast called The Dream. And it's all about MLMs, like multi-level marketing schemes, right? And so one of the ones they took a very deep dive on, so deep in fact that they had one of the, I think, producers of the show sign up to be a their wholesale prices are so expensive that I think it's a 20% markup on their actual retail prices. So it behooves the sellers to, instead of buying the wholesale, buy retail and try and resell the retail for a profit. And essentially, I honestly don't know how this company's still in business because it goes by one of the main, prosecutable offenses that a lot of MLMs have gone down for in the past, which is all of the profits are internalized. All the profit comes from within the pyramid. So the people who buy into it, who spend almost $200 to get into the game, aren't making any money by selling wholesale. They're not really making any money by selling for a small markup of the retail price. And also, what's the Carrie, dear friend of mine, and probably maybe friend of the show. So she has a makeup palette that she's very fond of. I think it's called Urban Decay, and that's the makeup palette that the Lime Light or now Lime Life stuff gets compared to a lot. So at Sephora or one of those other makeup retailers, you can get a palette of Urban Decay for like $17. If you were to go retail, and this is rough, like kind of remembering, but ballpark, for the same retail, for buying in retail, you would spend like 40 some dollars for the Limelight knockoff brand. Exactly. And so it wasn't exactly an MLM, but it definitely was a pyramid scheme. So when I first got out of the Air Force, my first job, massive air quotes job, was I worked for this place in Dublin called DRJ Unlimited. And how I got that job was I put my resume up. I was going to like the VA employment workshops and that sort of thing, and I got a call from this quote unquote marketing firm, and they were like, "Hey, so we were looking at your resume, and we really like a lot of the things you have to offer, and we were wondering if you'd like to come in for an interview." And so obviously, I have a huge interest in communications and an interest in marketing and that sort of thing. And so I was like, holy shit, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. This is something I'd actually love to do. And so I went in for an interview, and I think my first warning sign was the CEO, Dan. He was wearing a fucking like off the shelf suit jacket. That was
Amazing.
like the sleeves weren't long enough, so like I could see like three quarters of his wrist hanging out from under the sleeves of this jacket.
Amazing.
His pants didn't match the jacket, and they were like wrinkly as fuck.
So definitely just like a rental suit.
Yeah, 100%. And it, like something you not even that like something you would get off the rack at like Kohl's or some shit like that, but like poorly fitting. And so I had an interview with him, and then I was super excited because he said, "We actually have a second stage interview, and I like you a lot, and I think you would do well in it. So we're going to have one of our executives take you out for our second stage interview." So this dude, Seth, took me out for an interview, and we went to a local Panera, which was like a block away from the office. And first thing I noticed was we went to a Panera, and the guy interviewing me didn't offer to buy me coffee. normally, like, I don't think to most people that would be a big deal, but if you're trying to get someone to come to your company and work
Right.
for you and you're gonna take them out to like a coffee shop or something, you buy them fucking coffee.
Right.
And so I sat down, we had this interview. I found out that Seth was actually like 2 years younger than I was, and he was a quote unquote executive per the owner of the company. So I wound up getting the job. I went in for my first day, and the day started with like these games, right?
Right.
And so you fuck around for an hour and play games, and then you go out into the field. And going into the field meant putting on the coat. It was like a fleece jacket with the brand you were selling's logo embroidered on it.
Okay.
And you set up a pop-up table in a Walmart
Yep.
and pitched everyone you saw.
I remember those photos.
Oh yeah, it was fucking ridiculous. And like the first few times I felt good because I'm good with people, so I was making sales.
Right.
And I was supposed to get $40 a sale. And I remember kind of the part where it really sunk in that I didn't belong there was I made a $800 commission week. So I made 20 sales in a
Right.
week, which was ridiculously hard. It involved me staying past what should have been my time to go home by
Right.
3 hours.
Right.
Just to sign someone else up for this energy program from NRG.
Right.
And so come around the time that I should be getting this like 800-ish dollar check, instead of the normal like $230 check I get for
Right.
a 40-hour week, I got $320.
Oh, okay.
And so I had to
Huh.
pay for my own gas to get to all
Yeah.
these Walmarts in Central Ohio and to the office in Dublin from Johnstown. And
Right.
so I was losing money working this job.
Right.
And no one else seemed to see like how fucked the situation was. And
Right.
so the week I made 20 sales. After that, I was supposed to start doing interviews. And I remember, because if you get 20 sales in a week, you get an interview. And if you like the person you interview, you can add them onto your team. And once you get a team of five, you get promoted, and so on and
No.
so forth. And it's all about recruitment and feeding
Right.
more people into the machine.
Right.
And so I got to shadow my first interview with Seth. And it was this girl who had a master's in marketing.
Oh no.
And she was talking about like all of her interests, and Seth was like giving his spiel, and like I knew it would look incredibly unprofessional, but I like wanted to yell at this woman, like, fucking leave. This is
Right.
not for you. You have a
Right.
master's degree in marketing and you're going to be standing at a pop-up stand in Walmart. This is bullshit. This is not for you.
Right.
And so the interview ended. I went to the field. I came back, and the next day, I think it was a Wednesday, I went into the office. And I decided, like, I'm done here. This is bullshit. I can't do this anymore. This isn't good for my mental health because I'm wearing myself to the bone for nothing.
Right.
And so I went to my car and I got the pop-up table out of my trunk and I got my little shitty Android tablet that I had to catalog my sales in, and I put the table in the back storage room, and I set my tablet on Dan's desk. And Dan was like 20 minutes late. And so I'm standing by his door through morning meeting, and we're about to go do the cultish bullshit games in the
Right.
back. And Dan like hustles in because apparently there's been an interview waiting for him to get in at 9 o'clock, and it's like 9:30. And so he taps me on the shoulder and he's like, "Hey, I want you to do your first interview today." And I was like, "Actually, Dan, I wanted to talk to you about that." And he's like, "Oh, can I close the door?" It's like, yeah. So I closed the door and I was like, I tried to be diplomatic about it. I was like, hey man, like, I really respect your hustle. I understand what you're doing here and you're trying to make money. You're trying to chase those checks. But for me personally, I live up in Johnstown. This right. job isn't paying me enough to drive all over Central Ohio to different Walmarts and get the checks I've been getting.
Right.
And he said, I mean, you're still new, like, you're still processing, like, give it a right. couple more weeks and your checks will get bigger. And I said, look, Dan, I can't afford to work this out for a couple more weeks. I don't think I can afford to work this out to the end of this week.
Right.
I need to go. And then he got super passive aggressive.
Of course he did.
And yep. I was like, all right, I'm out. And so I left. And like probably 2 or 3 weeks after I left, I started noticing the friends I made while I was there posting statuses about leaving,
right.
Searching for new jobs, that sort of shit. And so part of me is super happy that I left for my own reasons, but another right. part of me is really happy that I was kind of the first person to really break the mold.
Right.
Because I was the first person who wasn't an asshole who left.
Right.
Because it was really easy to explain away some of the people who didn't really seem to give a shit about the work.
Right.
And people who didn't seem like they gave a shit about their own futures leaving. It's like, oh.
Right.
They thought they could find something better elsewhere or blah, 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 and they were a dick. But it would be really hard for Dan to spin that story about me. And people started realizing, like, holy shit. Like, one girl who worked there, she was a fucking physician assistant.
Really?
Yeah, she was a PA. Huh. And she was working this job. Another guy was an RN. Working really? This job, like, you could be making so much more money and doing so much more good outside of this. Like, what the fuck right. are you doing here?
Right.
But it's so cultish. It's so cult-like because, and holy shit, this is boring as hell. I'm rambling about this forever. But besides, like, the 40, which turns into 80-hour work weeks because you have to make a certain number of sales just to keep your job and if you want a decent check. And on top of that, so we worked Tuesday through Monday, I want to say.
Okay.
Or Wednesday through Monday. And then, Thursday through Monday. Tuesday, Wednesday was our weekend. Monday was our Friday. Mm-hmm. So Mondays we had like team events or team nights and we'd all go out to a bar.
Right.
And you'd also be able to work on Tuesday, Wednesday on your own time to make up okay. sales if you hadn't made them during your normal work week. So everything about this job was like isolating you from anyone who wasn't in the job.
Right, right.
And your only free time was spent with the people who have the same job and you're all fed the same line of bullshit.
Right.
And it's a cycle that keeps repeating.
Right.
And like the people I've talked to who got out, like they didn't all necessarily see that it was like this pyramid scheme bullshit, but their concerns were a lot more real. Because I'm lucky enough right now to be living with my dad. Like, that's what I had to do when I got out of the Air Force because, like, shit happened. And I'm incredibly grateful to my dad for giving me a place to stay. But I know at least 3 people who got out who basically just said, yo, working this job, I couldn't afford rent on my own. I had no right. roommates, I couldn't afford gas, and I couldn't afford rent, so I had to quit.
It reminds me a lot of, like, when you're talking about the dream and, like, MLMs themselves. Like, it reminds me a lot of this podcast I used to listen to called Oh No, Ross and Gary. Mm-hmm. Have you heard it?
No.
It's these two podcasters, journalists, basically not just report about like religious cults, but actually join them.
Oh shit.
And then they come back and talk about what happened. So they had had like an 11-part series on Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were like, they both went into Scientology and both like went up the levels of it and like showed basically both how like they got into the good graces of all these people and like got into all of these like different like kind of like classes and ceremonies and shit like that and how much they had to pay for it and then how they got found out after.
Oh,
and
shit.
And how they were like blacklisted and stuff like that. It's a really good series. I don't know if I can find it, but maybe we can put it in the show notes.
100%.
But yeah, Ono, Ress, and Carrie, they are also on the same network that my brother and me is on, I think.
Oh, Maximum Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, so, shit, dog. Yeah. So,
very good.
I'm very sore because yesterday I helped a friend move. Her and her husband move to a new apartment. So I was getting stuff into the truck, helping them out.
Nice.
And Zach, so I know Ariana from work, and then Zach is her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're both super into podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but so they both were founding members of something called CUS.
Yeah, that's
yeah, the Cincinnati Underground Society show.
Yeah.
So
they work on that with Travis then?
Yeah. And I had no idea. And I found Ariana through my new work. And so
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's actually rad as fuck. So while we were moving, I was actually like talking a lot to Zach about like different podcasts, and he was talking to me about like the McElroys and other like actual play D&D podcasts.
Right.
And, so apparently how Zach got to know about my existence was, I think, one of the first days when I was in training with Ariana, I was talking about podcasts and I was like, yo, I have a huge podcast recommendation for you. Have you heard of Dubai Friday?
Mm-hmm.
And so she went home and talked to Zach and was like, hey, so this guy at my work asked me if I knew this podcast called Dubai Friday. And Zach said, I wouldn't meet this guy.
Who knows that? Okay.
Digga, digga, digga. Friendship.
Dubai Friday is the real cult here.
It is. It is. It super is. And speaking of which, I am currently Merlining it out. But before I go into more depth about how I'm Merlining it out, I need to take a break.
Well, what's going on?
So if you hear faint South Park in the distance, that's my dad listening to South Park in the other room. I don't have a super soundproof recording studio like the great podcasters. I don't have that full Dickerson.
It's true. Yeah. As soon as we both have expenses to move out on our own and have a podcast studio and
right
stuff like that.
And cat. I want a cat so bad. More than a girlfriend. I want a cat.
How do you feel? We should just live together and have a podcast studio.
This sounds like a really good idea.
That's actually not a bad idea. But yeah, I'm trying to save money.
Live better at Walmart.
For next year. And then like try to buy a house. But
very nice. I don't know. Very not millennial of you.
I think if I buy a house now, I can get it paid off in my 30s.
Aren't you spending all of your money on avocado toast and killing, like, urinals?
No, actually, the funny thing is that when I got out of my last job, I actually had more savings than people thought, you know, like more savings than like, you know, lazy entitled millennials who spend all their money on avocado toast and Starbucks should have. So like I basically lived off all that. I mean, obviously I'm at my parents' rent free, but, but yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I was pretty good financially there, and now I'm making some good money, rent, and I'm rent free. So,
hell yeah. So I, my initial stay, well, my stay hasn't changed. I'm still staying in the same place with my dad, but while I was getting on my feet and I was job hunting, I was rent free. And I'm still kind of rent-free, but my dad and I had a conversation. He said, all right, because he helped me out like with some money because I had no income. This was before like I was able to get disability through the VA for the shit that got me kicked out essentially of the Air Force. And I wasn't med boarded. I should have been medically retired, but I got cocked.
Right. But I'm That's not my bitter. America right there.
I'm not bitter. But so I was, so once I got my job and I had my disability income coming in, and I started getting back on my feet and having more money, he and I had a sit down conversation, and, the first one happened, I think a few weeks ago, and he was like, hey, so, I'm not pressuring you, but I want you to put some thought into, a repayment schedule. Like, how much do you think you can afford a month to pay me back? And so I put some thought into it, and by saying I put some thought into it, I totally forgot about the conversation until a few weeks later.
Whoops.
When he asked me, and like I did a quick mental calculation about like the payments I need to make for bills that I have and paying down like my debt, which is like consumer debt, like credit card debt, that sort of thing. And so I was like, okay, I think I can afford like maybe $400 a month. And he was surprised. He was like, okay, so I think on like a 28-month schedule, blah, 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 blah. I was thinking like 300 would be good. I appreciate you offering four, but I think 300 is good. Okay. So it's not really rent. It's kind of rent, but it's more repayment for like him helping me get out of the hole that I was buried in.
And I don't want to do the same kind of thing with my parents after I leave, because I was paying $500 in rent, and now I'm not. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge help. But
oh, absolutely!
Still, it's I live here. I make food here and eat here and stuff like that. So yeah, parents are cool, man.
Dude, fucking love parents.
They can be cool. Parents can be cool.
Very true. So, and speaking of disposable income, I'm being a total Merlinite right now because, so I listened to the latest Back to Work and, so Merlin used to have the, so he's an Apple Watch wearer like me. And so he got
all of the latest models.
Oh yeah. He got the new boy. I also ordered the new boy. I was a cuck and didn't wake up at, like 3 a.m., which would have been midnight in Cupertino, to pre-order the Series 4 Apple Watch. I actually waited a day or so afterwards because I wanted to hear what the general consensus was from the people whose opinion I respect on that sort of thing, like Jason Snell, who does Six Colors, the website, Mike Hurley, who has the Relay FM network, and a few others. And the general consensus was, holy shit, this is great. So the Series 3, because I initially had a Series 0 Apple Watch, and it was, it worked, and it was, for the time, as far as like wearables, it was kind of revolutionary, but it was also really slow. When the Series 3 came out, I upgraded from my Series 0, and it was like stepping forward a decade. And like everything was so much quicker and snappier. The Siri was way more active. I had the cellular model so I could like go on runs or I could go to the gym on base and not have to worry about my phone falling out of my not very deep pockets in my basketball shorts while I was working out. and I could still listen to music and shit like that because it was all synced up to my watch.
Right.
And so I didn't really see the point in upgrading to the Series 4 until I heard how much of a difference it made from the people whose opinions on Apple products I really respect. So I ordered it. It's still in the mail. It should be getting here between October 29th and November 4th. So, and
Ooh, so a little ways away.
I'm the impatient boy. So on the
Yep.
latest Back to Work, I heard Merlin talking about the Fitbit Charge 3, which
Oh
wasn't.
no. You bought one too?
I did, and it got here within 2 days because I got it on Amazon. So
Amazon Primed.
Amazon Primed. On my left wrist, I have my old Series 3 aluminum Apple Watch, and on my right wrist, I have my Fitbit Charge 3.
So you're flossing on them,
I
basically.
am, yo, straight up flossing.
Straight up flossing. That's
And
something that I think people would wear in a rap video.
oh, yo, for sure.
Two wearables.
If tonight, when we go to the concert for our dear friend MC Freeman, Peter
Oh yeah.
Velarde,
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna be flossing on all these hoes with two wearable techs, and both of them track my sleep because I need to get better sleep rhythm.
Before I forget, that Peter Velarde, MC Freeman, new mixtape.
Oh,
Real good.
dude,
It's real good.
so
It's real
good.
good. It's real good. Blaze Runner 3049. If y'all didn't know, I wrote a review of it. It's on my site. So, you can check that out. But it's not plug time yet.
It's
So
not, it's not.
I just wanted to insert that in there. And we're gonna see him tonight. Hopefully with a lot of cool people.
I think that Villainous would totally understand, but I feel like the intro music, we should take a sample from one of the songs from Blaze Runner.
We should totally. I was
If we
talking. Oh,
clear that with Peter first.
are we going to reveal the secret? What our next episode is?
Oh no.
Okay.
We still need to talk
I
through the
mean,
time
that
warp
might.
to
That
get
itself might have been
approval.
too much, but
We can cut it out.
yeah, no, I was definitely thinking we should play like that beat. Have you heard Paul McCartney?
Yes.
It's so good. He's gonna play it tonight, and it's gonna be awesome.
Oh.
It's gonna be awesome.
Oh
Yeah,
man.
I'm
Oh
psyched to
man.
see. And you've never been to a Big Sig show, right?
Oh no, I haven't.
Big Sig, his friend Tyler Stark, who is awesome and produces a lot of their stuff. He throws these house parties now and again, and it's awesome. And you're gonna meet Tatum, and she's cool. I think I told you about her.
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah, she's like really, really great. Like pro trans, pro femme, like pop anthems.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's real good. It's real good. So enough about that show. I think I had things to talk about when you brought up wearables. Yeah. One, everybody at my job wears a wearable. That's my dog barking.
Boof,
Every
boof.
everybody at my job like wears a wearable because it's a lot of repetition. So they listen to a wearable and Bluetooth headphones. So they listen to podcasts every day
Nice.
or music or whatever. And two, when I was listening to another podcast recommendation, Articles of Interest, it's the spinoff of 99% Invisible about clothing and the historical significance of clothing and the cultural impact of clothing. When I was listening to that episode about pockets, they were talking about how there was a modernist idea in like the late 1800s about reducing the number of pockets that came on a suit
Ugh.
because like the old suits used to have an average of 27 pockets on them.
That
And
sounds
so,
ideal.
yeah. And so they were saying like the new thing would be just to have a wearable that you can wear around so you don't have to have a pocket
A fanny
for
pack.
most things. Yeah. So basically. So yeah.
Also,
I think that was all of my connecting threads.
Apologies to our to any UK friends for the use of fanny there.
Oh, yeah, that's not kosher right there.
Nah.
What else? Oh, as long as I can do pod rex, what Trump can teach us about con law is a very good too.
Oh shit! Yeah, I think you mentioned this super briefly last week. Tell me more.
Probably. So, these actually both of these podcasts I didn't realize are connected to 99% Invisible. So Roman Mars is awesome. The 99% Invisible crew is awesome. What Trump can teach us about con law is Roman Mars's conversations with his neighbor and constitutional local constitutional professor. What's her name? I want to give her credit because she is awesome. Hold on a second. Elizabeth Joe. And so they've had 28 episodes, and it's basically a conversation about constitutional law under the Trump administration and what we can learn about constitutional law, examining these kind of like little cases that we have in the Trump administration. So the last episode was about Kavanaugh.
Ugh.
And we don't have to actually talk about the hearing itself.
Thank you.
I did learn a lot about the Supreme Court process. And so I'm gonna share some of that right now.
Okay.
So I didn't know. Maybe it's just like the mystique of the position, but I didn't know that Supreme Court justices could be impeached.
Oh, shit. Neither did I.
You can impeach any federal judge, but it's the same process as impeaching the president. So it is very hard. I think what majority of the House of Representatives and 2/3 vote of the Senate. So yeah, very, very hard, but it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. They were saying like there's some misinformation online that was like a federal judge could nominate Brett Kavanaugh for impeachment, which is not true. Only the Senate can do that.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, hey, Merrick Garland could really stick it to him and nominate him for impeachment, which would be hilarious. But
oh, sorry for the creepy laugh.
Yes. I actually had useful notes on this. Impartiality. Written that judges can be partial, but in their impartiality have to recuse themselves from any situation in which they would be partial.
Huh.
You know, it's a honor system, obviously. So, yeah. We know that's not going to happen,
no.
But, it's really because if, I think legally it is a not an offense per se, but you're in legal trouble if you do that. If there's an understanding that you would be partial in a case and don't recuse yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, I didn't know this. Neutral hearings.
Okay.
Are so right now. No, not right now. He is a justice now, right?
Yes, he is. He was confirmed.
So, right before that, the court was eight justices. And so if there was ever a neutral hearing, which means, 4-4 and 4 against, ruling of the lower court, stands.
Huh.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I thought they just stopped on those issues. But no, the ruling of the lower court stands, and then makes it harder for the courts to appeal that, because they'll need to bring up another case that hadn't been heard.
Yeah.
In front of the Supreme Court. And obviously, if they're standing in the law, then it's harder to get a similar case heard.
Mm-hmm.
I learned some cool stuff from that. Go check those out if you're interested. What Trump Can Teach Us About Con Law is very, very good. You learn a lot in like half an hour. Like, they're pretty short episodes.
Oh, dude, I love learning a lot in half an hour.
Yeah. What else?
Well, let's see here. Oh, shit, dog. There's a thing that was like right on the tip of my tongue. I wrote a blog post today on my site, dylanbickers.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that I think I initially saw in NumTot, which is, forgive me, for the non-weird book crowd, but New Urbanist Memes for Transit-Oriented Teens is a Facebook group I'm part of,
mm-hmm.
Abbreviated NumTot. And they talked about Darius McConnell, who had been sentenced to essentially a state-run asylum in New York, because he was deemed criminally and dangerously insane.
Right. And
so Darius McConnell, from a young age, has had this this fascination and love for New York transit. He was stabbed when he was in elementary school, I believe, and part of his recovery was he found trains on the MTA to be very soothing. And so starting around the age of 15, when he was riding transit in New York, he was helping an MTA employee who wanted to spend time with his girlfriend. And he had this savant-like understanding. He was later diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome.
Okay.
He had this savant-like understanding of the subway and bus transit systems in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So he volunteered to help this MTA train driver by piloting the train while this driver visited his wife or his girlfriend.
Dylan, are you there?
So, a woman found young 15-year-old Darius alone.
Are you there? I can't hear you.
Oh shit, dog. Hello.
Yeah. I got that story, and then it cut out for like 5 seconds, but I could hear you there.
Okay, so Darius was covering for this guy who had to spend time with his girlfriend for the MTA. He basically piloted the train while this MTA employee visited his girlfriend.
Okay.
A woman saw young Darius in the conductor's cab and was concerned, so he called the police. She called the police. The train was stopped, and Darius was arrested.
Okay.
Darius, being a fucking real one, a motherfucking G, did not say, hey, I was doing this because I was covering for someone who wanted to see his girlfriend. He took full culpability for it. He got sent to, sent to a psychiatric facility, where he was like doped up on, antipsychotics and antidepressants.
Wow.
When he was released, he went back to the MTA, and his friends there were so overjoyed that he didn't rat, basically started the same deal again. So he got to like pilot trains or buses, right, and he got caught, and it was a violation of his parole. So he went to jail.
Jeez.
And got out and he kept doing this. He's been arrested like 36 times for just like driving either trains or buses on their fucking routes, like picking people up, doing the job. But he fucking loved it. That was shit.
That's the inspiration for transit-oriented teens?
No.
Okay. I thought that was like the story.
No, Numtot's just like transit, but okay. He is like the ultimate Numtot. But so Darius then got a job, like after, I don't know, like 20 some arrests, he got a job at the New York City Transit Museum.
Okay.
And he was so good at it, and he loved his job, and people loved him, and he became like a real folk hero in New York City. And he was subsequently fired from that job when his employer discovered his identity, that he was the quote unquote MTA bandit.
Yeah.
And like, he hadn't done anything wrong. His boss just fucking fired him. And so now, Darius has been sentenced to go to this like state-run psychiatric facility, which is essentially a fucking asylum in New York City.
Yeah.
And like, all he wants to do is drive the fucking trains. Like, give him a job. He's a good dude. He hasn't hurt anyone in his life. He's never had a violent arrest.
Right.
Nothing bad has ever come of him, like, piloting these transit systems. He just really, really loves transit. Like, he's a good-ass dude. And he's a fucking G because, like, the first time he got caught for this shit, he didn't rat out the people from the MTA. He's just, a solid dude. And so I wrote a blog post about this on my site. I'm going to link it in the show notes. But there is a link at the very bottom to a website, Free Darius Now. Mm-hmm. And they're working on the appeals process, and there's a GoFundMe. So if you have anything you can donate, any money at all, it doesn't matter if it's like 5 cents or whatever, but please, please, please donate, because like, I've spent my own time in a psychiatric facility. I've had my struggles with mental health, and Darius, he just wanted like his appeal, or not appeal, but his original wishes when he was being charged was he wanted to go to a supervised group home. And the he wanted. He wanted to go to a supervised group home where his mental health needs would be taken care of, and he'd be around other people who were like decent people. And the judge, who didn't want to be seen on camera, and the prosecutor denied him that shit and sent him off to essentially Bedlam, like the modern day version of Bedlam.
Damn.
And so the appeal's going on now. If you have any money to give, please, please, please donate to Darius. This is a cause that is very close to my heart, because I've struggled with my own mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And this guy is just a fucking G. He's never hurt anyone, never wanted to hurt anyone. He just wanted to fucking drive the goddamn train.
Right.
Sorry. I got really worked up.
I actually saw that post today, because it was on DC's Facebook. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wow, okay. So I didn't know you wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, it's a good thing that putting that mouthpiece out there, because I had no idea.
Hell yeah, dude. Shit, dog. We've gone over an hour. Should we button this up?
I mean, I think it looks like we've gone over an hour.
Oh, no, we took a break.
We took a break. So I was going to talk about this channel called Big Joel on YouTube.
Do it.
Yeah, this guy is really knowledgeable. So I first got onto his channel watching these video essays on the resurgence and then death again of Christian propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Through the God's Not Dead movies, and how he's both simultaneously critiques the movies on how well they deliver Christian propaganda, and like as movies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did a really good job with that. So I was curious to see this video. It's called The Nonsense Politics of PragerU.
Prager.
Prager.
Yeah.
You've seen PragerU, right? Like, you've seen those videos out there?
So one of our listeners is actually a super big fan of PragerU. I
Okay.
love you, Mr. O'Connor,
Oh.
Liam's dad, but still, PragerU is so much bullshit.
And so I think as quite a while ago, I had never heard of PragerU, and so you hear the name PragerU, and you're like, oh, this might just be like an educational, like, commentary thing. Maybe I should watch this video. And then it shows you like it looks like a like real talk, like big science kind of video, like with like the ones they have with like astrophysicists and like Neil deGrasse Tyson. And you're like, okay, I can sit through this video. And then you watch more of it and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't actual science at all.
No.
They're just making their claim, and
Not supporting it.
yeah,
It's
not
pop
supporting it.
conservative science.
Pop conservative science. So this video is pretty long, 30 minutes long, but he basically talks about these videos. Sorry, these videos that are basically saying, like, they start by appealing to your sense of self-worth, right? They start by saying, what makes you happy? Like, how are you going to be the happiest? And then at the end, it goes into like a sort of propaganda-ish, like, you are only happy because you're focusing on yourself. So you should focus, like, the things that make you happy are when you make yourself happy. So, protests won't make you happy. They don't obviously say, like, go down a list of that, but they imply, like, you shouldn't come together as a society.
Things that benefit others are not going to
Things that
make you
benefit others aren't.
happy.
It's like, yeah, it's like that. It's like the huge,
It's a very Ayn Randian.
the First Amendment of Randianism is things that make others happy are
Things that will make the
not,
individual miserable.
yeah, they by essence will make your life more miserable. And so they take that, and then they follow it up with like, hey, Rockefeller wasn't a bad guy. And like,
That was my Halloween
and then
spooky sound.
It's like, you can't have like democracy and like heterogeneous cultures,
Whoa, there's
stuff like
never
that,
been a miserable millionaire. There's never been a miserable person
right?
who worked for a millionaire, because all millionaires are good. Shut the
And then
fuck
like
up.
and then like discussing discussing God as fact, and like bringing God into your teachings of conservatism. And it's fucked. Yeah, so I don't know. I like Big Joel, and I think he has some pretty good points in that video. So
Oh, hi, I'm Dennis Prager, and I'm here to tell you that the queers are bad, and
Exactly.
if you believe in anyone other than yourself, capitalism's gonna take advantage of you. So build your own business. You're great. I love you. Thanks. This has been Dennis Prager. This message has been brought to you by Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, and Donald Trump.
Right.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, I think there's one out there, which kind of like misquotes Socrates and saying that the only way to live a just life is to love the ones that are pious and hate the ones that are not, or something like that. It's hurtful.
I love people who believe themselves to be intellectuals, but and they're actually just people who recycle garbage that's spat out by very influential and visually entertaining conservative think pieces that if you were to do even the slightest bit of digging, you would find are absolute bullshit.
Yep.
Go ahead.
When they asked Johnny Cash why he wanted to do Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, I love that song.
Why he wanted to do the concert?
Why?
One of the executives told him, you know, your listeners are our Christian families.
Ugh.
How are they going to think if you try to play a show in front of prisoners, murderers and rapists, and try to make them feel better? And Johnny came back at him and said, you know, if they think that way, then they're not Christians.
Who? Johnny Boom. Cash, the OG, like, swear to God, the OG punk rock singer.
Right. And I mean, that dude was also a dick in a lot of ways, but...
He was a dick.
That's what it reminded me of right there.
Hashtag kill your heroes, but I still love me some Johnny Cash. I hear right. The train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't yep. seen the sunshine since I don't know when. God damn. That is my go-to, what the fuck do you call it, karaoke song is Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, yeah?
I can't sing it well, but god damn, I'll sing the shit out of it.
I like Big River. It's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Cash is good. Yeah. Is there anything else this week, Dylan?
Christ.
I mean, I was going to talk about Anthony Bourdain, but I'm not done with Kitchen Confidential.
Next week.
R.I.P. Anthony.
Yeah. Jesus. Like, one of the few, like, and please, I am praying to the universe. Please, please, please don't let there be anything substantially evil out there about Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
He was one of the few, like, he was a dick, but, like, in a good way.
Right. And I guess I'll talk a little bit about it, but in his books, he doesn't hide any of that. It's not mm-hmm. like, he's like, no, he straight up goes, yeah, I was a junkie.
Oh, yeah.
I was a dick to my girlfriend. And
straight like, up, there's a journalist who I fucking loved. He was a writer for the New York Times media desk. His name was David Carr. He passed away back in, I want to say, 2014, 2015.
Right.
But he was a guy who went from, like, massive coke addict.
Right.
Not being able to take care of his daughter. Not being able to take care of himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this amazing talent for writing and this beautiful perspective that so few other people, at least in this generation of journalists and writers that I've seen, was right. able to distill and humanize America.
Mm-hmm.
And he had that talent and he took it to the New York Times. And they took him because he had that talent and it was just absolutely amazing. So I empathize a lot with Mr. Carr and
mm-hmm.
like every year around his death, I just, it hurts a little bit. It's like right. not nearly as bad as like losing a family member, but like it's still, you still feel it because they had such an impact, not just on the American culture, but on me as well.
Right. I mean, it's, like the Anthony Bourdain is a huge figure in my family
mm-hmm.
because we would watch his shows. I think we've watched his shows for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, all together, just something we could bond over. And also he was super respectful of the culture.
Yes.
Of everybody. And just wanted to have a good time and learn techniques of everybody. And he was a really good writer.
Yes, 100%. And there was something amazing about this guy, because there are so many people right now who are in food culture, whether it be food media or what have you, that they look at like the world when it comes to food, and mm-hmm. the world when it comes to food is the very metropolitan places. It's France, it's Italy, it's right. Spain. Anthony Bourdain was someone who could go anywhere right. in the world and share the experience and the story and the soul that made that food what it was
mm-hmm.
to a typical American audience.
Like I would say that, you know, and no, there, it's not disrespecting these other travel channels that go to these Michelin star restaurants and actually
I shouldn't have laughed at that, but still.
Have you watched Somebody Feed Phil?
I have.
It's super good.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's really funny. He's just really genuine person, and he goes to these like great eating spots. And so there's one in Spain where he goes to what is dubbed the world's best restaurant. And he eats there, and everything looks spectacular and amazing. But you know what you're not going to get there? You're not going to get the culture that came with the food.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get somebody, you know, telling you about their 16-hour workday and drinking beers with you.
Uh-huh. 16-hour workday, or as we would say, small plates.
You know, I'm going to say you're probably not going to have the world's best food, because the world's best food is not on display.
Yeah, you know? It's 100%.
In the small little shacks. It's in family passed down recipes.
Yeah,
it's like... And then that, and having the culture next to eating a meal and actually getting to know people is kind of the point, right?
Mm-hmm. So, and it's like,
that's
it's
why I
like
love
that.
Those shows.
It's like that literally everywhere, because any corner of the world you go to, it doesn't matter if you go to the far reaches of the world or if you go here to Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
The best lasagna I have had in Columbus cost me $7. It was right. at Mama's Pasta and Brew on right. campus, which is about to shut down.
Right.
The best pho I've had isn't at the trendy ass 6-1 pho.
Right.
It's not at, although Three Tigers Brewing had some decent pho. Like, I'll give them that. It's at this little place where I won't say the name of, because OPSEC, and I really like that place, and it's mm-hmm. never crowded. I want them to get more business, but I don't want people to bother me, so selfish as fuck.
I know a place like that. We'll talk off air, because it might be the same place.
Word. But it's run yeah. by this little Vietnamese grandma. Her name is Lynn. She's super sweet. She gave me her phone number.
Yep.
Because
is it the one where they pick vegetables in the kitchen?
Yes.
Like, yes. I know exactly where you're talking about.
So she that place is like maybe a 3 to 7 minute drive from my office.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll go there during lunchtime and grab pho, and I'll have like maybe 15 minutes to eat it. So I was like slurping it down, and she gave me her number and said, "Hey, if you're going to come by, just call me a little bit before you're about to go on your lunch."
And then she'll make it up.
Yeah. I'll get your shit started for you. And I'm like, oh my God, Lynn, that means so much.
That's awesome.
But like the little places that, in like in Philadelphia, like you don't go to Pat's for a Philly.
Right.
You go to like, you're wandering somewhere in the fucking theater district or some shit like that. You just gotta have a punk show and you're drunk as hell. And you ask some dude on the street, it's like, where can I get a cheesesteak? And right. they'll say, oh, on the corner of blah and blah. On the corner of Dingle and Dingle. And so you go to the corner of Dingle and Dingle, and there's this like little hole in the wall, and you go in there, and it's the best cheesesteak you've ever had.
Right.
And they tell you, because you've never had one before, this is, honest to God, my first experience having a cheesesteak in Philadelphia. But He asked me, what do you want on it? I was like, I don't know, everything. And he's like,
Everything.
that's not a cheesesteak. If you get everything
Okay.
on it, it's gonna fuck it up. The flavors ain't gonna be bad. The flavors are gonna be bad. No. All right.
There you go.
Here's what you should get. You should get the cheesesteak, you should get the cheese wedge, you should get peppers and a little bit of mushroom. That sound good? Do you like mushroom? Yes, sir. All right. Give me 3 minutes.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. 10 out of 10, best sandwich I've had in my life.
That's how you know the people that that are serving the food are genuine. They like don't care that you're not gonna spend that much money on like they're not gonna overprice a sandwich. They're going to be like, "No, dude, you're gonna fuck up your lunch. I'll fix you up something."
Hell yeah.
Like that's great. I was gonna say my favorite piece of pizza was on campus at
Is it hound
New York.
dogs?
No, it was a place called New York Pizza by the Slice.
Oh shit,
It
dog.
was there in my I think it closed down after my senior year because good old OSU bought the or is still trying to I think they're still trying to buy that block. But yeah, so but the guy knew my name. His name, I think this is racist, but I like every pizza maker's name is Tony.
You can't be racist against white people.
I don't think I've ever met a pizza maker not named Tony, but yeah, he was just this like cheery bald dude who I was always like, oh, pepperoni mushroom, yep,
Oh
and a
my
Coke,
God! That's my shit, dude!
yep, pepperoni
Why have we
mushroom.
never had pizza together?
Super good, super good. And last thing I was gonna say is, now that my weekends are Sunday, Monday, I have tonight to drink and do stuff.
Hell yeah.
So I was thinking about going to campus early before the party and start the night off right with PJs. You know what PJs? PJs fat sandwiches.
Oh yeah.
But I think I'll need a couple drinks before I get there.
I feel it.
PJ, for anybody else who doesn't know PJ's is one of those places that serves you a huge hoagie bun filled with French fries and chicken fingers and calls it a sandwich. So, and like cut up burger and stuff like
Oh man, I didn't even get the nits, but I feel like I'm about to come. But anyway.
that. Let's wrap this episode up.
Yeah, let's button this up. All right, Devin, I love you.
I love you too, Dylan. We need to do plugs though.
Oh shit, dog. Yeah, we do. All right,
Let's not forget
so
about
you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Dylan Bickers, spelled like the greatest rapper of all time. Dylan,
Donnie.
Dylan. Last name Bees and Boy, Ckers.
Best
You will.
five rappers. Dylan, 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 Dylan.
I'm still so surprised I pulled that out of my ass last week. Well, last 2 weeks.
Yes, I was more shocked. You can find me on Twitter at Devin Nava, not spelled like anything, just at Devin Nava. I actually had the thought this week that I should change one of my handles to at Dev in the Lab or something like that.
Oh shit, dog, yeah.
But
I mean,
I don't.
seasonally, I changed my handle, not my like username, but my
Your
handle
Twitch,
to
yeah.
the Spooky Jew. So
Nice.
I feel really good about that with 2 zeros instead of 2 O's.
Nice.
Let's see here. Our beats, which are fucking more fire than Dylon ever could be, are done by Villainous Beats. We'll have a link to his SoundCloud in the show notes.
And I don't know, should we do like a little special thing about like all of the local artists that we're gonna see tonight? Because
Hell yeah, we should.
that'd be pretty dope. I'm gonna set that up.
We need the record raver to bring this out for us.
All right. Actually don't have the page up. Stall for me.
Shit, dog. We're gonna talk about some local music scene shit. Oh my God,
I
I
clicked on
can't
the wrong thing.
stall. Oh, God. He's still trying, but it's okay.
There we go.
Because you're all going to be buying. Don't make me do this anymore.
Okay. So, yeah, tonight we are going to see MC Freeman, obviously. And we're going to see Tatum. Mm-hmm. We can put those links in the show notes and all that. I know those two personally, and they are unbelievable. I haven't seen Bunny Love or Callie Dreamer before, but it's going to be fire. I know Jacob's also going to be there. Jacob McGiff, do you know him?
Hell yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay. So that's Pathos, and he was just performing with MC Freeman last night. Also, MC Freeman has that new tape, and he also had like a whole like viral campaign. So if you want to see all of that and look at my review, that's on my site, devinava.com. What else?
Let's see here. I think.
More things?
So yeah, I mentioned earlier, I've got a site, dylanbickers.com. I just published that, blog post called Free a Folk Hero. You can subscribe to my RSS or, anything like that. Also, masthead.tech/every-other-Wednesday, and you can get all the good all the shit hyphens that we put on this this dope-ass podcast.
Amazing.
Subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play, and please give us those good 5 stars. The only way we spread is by people, listeners like you, spreading the good word, and... just pulled up Yahoo Answers. Do you want a final Yahoo? It's literally the top thing in Yahoo Answers, and it makes me feel super uncomfortable.
That's weird. Okay, let's do it.
I'm black and raised by whites.
All right. I love you, Devin.
Love you too, Devin. Bye. Bye.
What?
Yo, dude, seriously, though.